The Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
As the Omicron variant arrives here, are further restrictions now more likely? Bottom of the class, the government takes a hit over masks in schools, and the sums don't add up, a warning from the Fiscal Advisory Council. We'll have all that and more on tonight's Late Debate. Justin McCarthy here with you tonight, and joining me in studio we have Senator Martin Conway of Fine Gael, Kathleen Funchen, Sinn Féin TD for Carlow Kilkenny, Paul Murphy, People Before Profit TD for Dublin South West, and Paul Hosford, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. We want to hear from you, so please do get in touch. You can text the programme on 51551, email us at latedebate@rte.ie or tweet at latedebaterte. Now, as we heard in the news bulletin today, a case of the Omicron coronavirus variant has been discovered in Ireland. The case is associated with travel from one of the affected designated countries, and the person affected is isolating. But what are the implications of this for transmission of the virus, and does it make restrictions, further restrictions, more likely? Well, we'll talk to virologist Professor Kim Roberts in just a moment. But first, Paul Hosford, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. I know you have been following developments in relation to the parliamentary party meetings that have been taking place this evening. What have the politicians been saying about the likelihood of further restrictions in the weeks ahead?
Well, Justin, I think the big one, the big signal is from the Taoiseach in the Fine Gael parliamentary party meeting. He said that he would be sceptical about the value of another lockdown or any more restrictions based on the current situation. He said that at the moment we seem to be stabilising or getting a little better. He said that the only worry is that if things go wrong, they'll go wrong from a very high base. That's if, you know, if something unforeseen happens, or if hospitalizations and ICU admissions start to tick back up, or if this Omicron variant turns out to be more serious than is feared, that it would go wrong from a place where we're at about 4,000 cases a day. I suppose the general sense from the PPs is that there's no appetite among the public or among the government, or even at the moment from public health, for more restrictions. We'll see obviously tomorrow.
Yes, because the NPHET meets tomorrow. It's possible that there might be further restrictions then, but as the CMO has been saying today, that there has been some progress in dealing with the Delta variant of this virus, which is the dominant variant here at the moment.
Yeah, and that's really where I suppose heads are at in terms of dealing with the virus, is that Delta wave. Tony Holland made that point yesterday. He said, look, there's a lot of focus on this Omicron variant, but what we're really in the midst of is a Delta wave, and that's what we really need to get on top of. And that comes down to the cutting of social contacts and the maintenance of those basic public health measures. Now, what was raised at both the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil parliamentary party meetings tonight was the effect that that advice is having on hospitality. At the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party meeting, four members signed a motion asking for a delay in the cut to the employer wage subsidy scheme, which began its tapering today. The same question was asked at the Fine Gael parliamentary party meeting. Both Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath said that they were reviewing the situation pending, kind of gave the signal from what I've been told, Martin. Obviously, know if my sources are any way good, that essentially it's a wait and see to what NPHET says tomorrow, and then maybe there'll be some kind of review on the eWIS for the industries affected.
All right, we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. But Paul, was there any mention at the meetings this evening of the criticism that was shipped by the Minister for Education today over the way the government handled the introduction of mandatory mask wearing in primary schools?
Yeah, slight mention across the board of this mask thing. I think a lot of politicians at the moment are kind of just waiting to hear back how the first day went within their constituencies. Try and see, I suppose, is this a big deal? One of the questions that has come up, and the Taoiseach answered today in the Dáil, he told Alan Kelly that principals and schools will be covered while while carrying out this public health advice, but Alan Kelly said to him that he had trawled the document and saw no actual legal indemnity for schools and school principals. So that's more of a the question that's around, rather than I suppose Norma Foley's performance or otherwise on radio.
All right. Okay, but Paul, thanks for that for now. I want to talk now to Professor Kim Roberts, virologist at Trinity College in Dublin. Professor Roberts, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Perhaps it's not a surprise, but how much of a concern is it that the Omicron variant of the virus is now in the country?
I think, as you say, it's not really a surprise. I think over the next few days, few weeks, we're going to find out that there are more cases of this Omicron variant around the world. What's important is whether or not that variant is spreading within the communities. And we don't have that information yet.
So do we know if it is more transmissible than the Delta variant?
It's too early to tell. I mean, scientists around the world are collecting as much data as possible, understanding whether or not this virus is more transmissible, understanding what impact the mutations might have on the immune responses and the vaccine responses to this variant. But it's too early to tell. And of course, speculation really isn't helpful at this point because there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of educated guessing, but we really do just have to wait and see.
We have seen in the past, though, haven't we, viruses have become more transmissible but perhaps less deadly, haven't we?
So this is one of those hypotheses that is really under scrutiny at the moment. That's a very much a textbook theory that over time viruses become less pathogenic, they cause less disease. But what we don't really have a handle on is what the scale of that timeline might be, and also whether or not that is true for lots of different viruses. You know, if we take HIV, HIV has been circulating amongst humans for many, many decades, and the lethality of the virus hasn't changed. When we think about coronaviruses, well, we have four human-adapted coronaviruses that cause the common colds. They cause about 15% of common colds each year. And the assumption is that they similarly crossed into the human population from an animal reservoir and possibly caused a pandemic way back at various times in history. But it's difficult to gauge that time frame that potentially made these viruses more mild. So unfortunately, we are potentially looking at long term if this textbook theory holds true, but we don't have good evidence to say that that is what's going to happen.
What additional precautions then should the government now be looking at to slow the spread of this variant?
So I think there are some basic transmission interventions that we could strengthen, that we could be better at, that might reduce the chances of us needing to have more stringent restrictions or lockdowns. So, you know, wearing masks, but also wearing good quality masks that are well fitted to the face and therefore protect the wearer, not just from reducing the amount of virus they breathe out into the environment, but also protect that wearer from breathing in virus particles that are hanging in the air. So we could be wearing, you know, better quality masks that are at least three or four layers thick, and even tested masks that would be the FFP2 standard or N95 standard in the US. So we could do that. We could improve ventilation. So we've talked a lot about ventilation in schools, but I think there's also stronger messages that we could put out about ventilation in taxis, in buses. You know, we go on buses and a lot of the windows are shut, even though they have a sticker on saying keep the windows open. So, you know, there's more messaging that we could be doing that would explain to people the benefit of opening windows, improving ventilation to clear any virus that's hanging out in the air.
And in relation, you mentioned masks there, and we've obviously seen that very sudden introduction of mask wearing for from third class students in primary school and upwards. Do you think that will be effective in reducing transmission in schools?
The evidence so far says that wearing masks, pretty much any type of mask, reduces the amount of virus that's released into into the space, into the air, the better the quality of mask, the better protection it gives to the wearer. Now, at the moment, we have a situation where our primary school children don't really have any policies that protect them from transmission. And I'm not convinced that schools are a safe environment. And I'd really like to see the data that NPHET are using to have that confidence that transmission isn't taking place in schools. Mm,
because we are constantly told, aren't we, that schools are a setting with relatively low levels of transmission.
And I just don't understand that. You know, we wear masks in offices. We accept that in indoor spaces where lots of people are together, there is a transmission risk, and we wear masks to reduce that. So when I'm giving lectures at university, everyone's wearing a mask. And I don't see why, you know, what is magical about schools that mean that they are a lower risk. So I think that bringing in masks, you know, it's a real shame. And we shouldn't be asking our kids to wear masks. But it's a method that we could theoretically bring in quickly to reduce the transmission risk for kids. Now, again, one of the questions I have is, why was it lowered to 9 years? What was the rationale for dropping it to 9 years rather than 8 years or 10 years? So I'd really like to understand that. And I think if we could get better communication so that we understand the logic and the thinking behind some of these changes, we might bring parents along a bit more and have more buy-in from parents and teachers as to why wearing masks now would be beneficial.
What about introducing air filtration systems in classrooms? Is there a benefit in that?
So we've had, you know, one of the great things that happened in September is that there were carbon dioxide monitors distributed to schools. So classes have been collecting the carbon dioxide information, and that is a proxy measure of how well the ventilation is. I think schools haven't been as supported as well as they could have been to understand that data and to work out how to make changes to classrooms to improve that ventilation. But what is clear is that we have a group of classrooms that are very, very difficult to create good ventilation just by opening windows. And of course, it's getting colder, so we want to be a situation where the windows don't need to be fully open to maintain good ventilation. And that's where HEPA filters could come in. So it's not necessarily that every classroom needs a HEPA filter, but in classrooms where we now have evidence that there is poor ventilation, HEPA filters can be that short-term bridge to reduce the transmission risk if any virus is being breathed out in the air. And I do think they would be beneficial. They're used in hospital settings, they're used in industrial settings, and they're used by other countries very effectively.
All right. And just finally, Professor Roberts, before I let you go, we'll be discussing later in the programme the people who have made all of these decisions in recent weeks and months, and the fact that it is primarily men that have made these decisions. Have women's voices been lost at the top table of decision making in relation to these vital public health measures?
I think they have. Almost a year ago, a group called COVID Women's Voices was set up, and I'm part of that group. And it was set up to try and raise the voices and raise the opinions and the experiences of women during this pandemic that are being lost because the leadership is so male-dominated. And I do wonder how decisions would have been handled slightly differently if there were women in the room, and whether or not we wouldn't have had an announcement at 5 o'clock on a Friday, on a Wednesday, saying that masks are going to be in schools tomorrow morning. You know, I just wonder whether or not with a greater diversity of experience and voices, we would have more clarity in the decisions and better communication in the decisions, so that when we wouldn't have so much transmission at this point.
Professor Roberts, thank you very much indeed for your time this evening, and thanks for talking to us. Paul Murphy, can I just ask you about something that Kim Roberts said there in relation to the introduction of HEPA filters? Because I know you had and you were speaking on a bill which passed through the Dáil today on a right to clean air in workplaces and schools. The government supported that bill. Are you satisfied with that?
Well, it's certainly very good that they supported it. The question is now, whether it will actually be implemented. And we're not precious about exactly how it's implemented. It could be implemented by regulation or it could be implemented by legislation. I've had bills passed through second stage in the Dáil before that never turned into law. For example, the Objective Sex Education Bill. Sometimes the government, under pressure, says, well, we'll let it go through, but doesn't do anything about it. But certainly it's welcome, but we'll be continuing to push.
Yeah, we had Minister Damien English, I think, saying that there are, what he said, were certain legal and practical aspects of this legislation which would have to be addressed before it goes any further. That doesn't sound overly hopeful.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the central issue is that we are now almost 2 years into a pandemic. In the majority of that time, we have known that airborne transmission of COVID is a crucial vector, a crucial way that COVID is being transmitted. And we have no legislation whatsoever defining workers' right to a clean air, defining pupils, students' right to clean air, and defining what clean air actually is. So that's what our bill does. It does so by defining clean air basically as air with less than 900 parts of CO2 per million, which is a useful proxy for kind of how stale the air is, therefore how COVID could be hanging around. Or you could not meet that measure but still have clean air if you have necessary filtration systems. And it then empowers the Health and Safety Authority to do inspections about that. Because this is crucial. If we want to avoid a cycle of lockdowns, of restrictions, etc., dealing with the question of ventilation, which is masks, which is windows, which is CO2 monitors, which is also HEPA filters, is absolutely crucial.
Kathleen Funchen, do you think that the issue of filtration, air filtration in schools, that should have been dealt with first before they went to masks for children?
Absolutely. I think that there's a number of measures around schools. First of all, getting rid of the contact tracing was completely disastrous. And you'd have to ask yourself how or why did anyone think that was a good idea? That was the first massive mistake. The fact that they haven't had any of the HEPA filtration. And in fairness, it has been raised by numerous people. I think in particular, Professor Orla Hegarty has been campaigning for this for a long time, since COVID, I suppose, began nearly 2 years ago. And I think the other issue of like class sizes and the type of buildings our children are being taught in. And remember, we are nearly 2 years into this situation, so they could have started to address issues like class size, prefabs, all of those things. We were not in a great situation in many respects. Our health service, our education system, you know, was sort of in a crisis coming into COVID, and I think it got highlighted even more. But certainly there is difficulties around the messaging and how it was communicated. I think many parents didn't even realise until this morning on the way into school. And I think there should have been certainly lead-in time, you know, a chance to explain to kids. Kids have been through a very, very difficult time. And I think something that gets lost sometimes in the message is this talk about how, you know, they're encouraging for children to cut down on their social contacts, yet it's okay for adults to go in, have a few drinks, have a meal once they're out by midnight. But kids, you know, activities after school all have to be curtailed. And I think it's very unfair on children. And I think we need to talk about that more.
I just want to ask Martin Conway about the government's reluctance to move on air filtration and clean air in classrooms. I mean, would it not make sense, as Professor Roberts suggested there, to introduce these HEPA filters into classrooms?
It would. And my understanding is that if it's to be done correctly, you'd be talking about 1,000 to 1,500 euros per classroom. Now, bearing in mind that in the country at the moment we have 50,000 classrooms.
Is it a cost issue then?
Well, it's to get it done right. Now, I am a big believer in filtration. I'm a big believer in fresh air. And I actually believe that it's not just a measure that would deal with COVID, mm-hmm. but there's also a measure that would deal with flus and other airborne conditions as well. So I think that this is something that needs to be done.
But we've had a lot of government politicians come into studios like this over the past couple of months and say, I'm a believer in it, it needs to be done, it should be looked at, but nothing's happened.
Yeah, but you see, it needs to be done right. And I think that you'd have government politicians in this studio trying to defend something that's not done right. So I'm absolutely believe that the government is committed to a strategy in terms of dealing with this. And as a matter of fact, in the Health Committee, we published a report on this whole area. We had Orla Hegarty and other experts in terms of this area in before the Health Committee. And, you know, the evidence that they presented at the committee was very compelling. So I would very much believe that this has to happen, and I believe it will happen. The face masks is a very temporary measure. Nobody wants to see children.
How do you know it's temporary?
We go by NPHET advice. And you know, the one thing that we've done right, in my view, in this country, is that we have listened to the public health experts, and we have, by and large, implemented the advice from the public health experts. And, you know, okay, nearly 6,000 people in this country have lost their lives, which is an absolute tragedy. But per head of population, compared to every other, compared to many of our European colleagues and countries, we have a much lower mortality rate. And that is simply because not alone have the government followed public health advice, but the public have also bought into it, where we have 95% almost of our population vaccinated.
We did have a lot of school principals out today raising concerns about, first of all, about the way masks was communicated, as Kathleen was saying there, but also questioning what their legal right is, or whether they would be legally backed if they refuse access to education to children who refuse to comply with these new rules. I just want to play a clip of what the Minister for Education, Norma Foley, had to say about it under questioning from Labour's Eoin Reardon earlier today.
I think it's important, Deputy, because I've heard from you and indeed from others about the necessity to get the guidelines in place as a matter of urgency. Guidelines are required. We did that yesterday, but we are very clear in the guidelines. And I know schools. I have spent the vast majority of my working
life
in
schools. We've all worked in schools.
I have the floor, Deputy, and I am aware that schools take a flexible approach. We have advised that they take a flexible approach over the coming days.
Requirement. The word requirement was used. That's not flexibility.
Deputy, please.
Yes, I do believe I have the floor. Thank you. And grandstanding on a matter of public health serves no good purpose.
For the love of God.
In terms of...
For the love of God. If I hear that accusation one more time...
In terms of the opportunity to address the specific question, Cathaoir, look, I would beg your indulgence. In relation to there being an opportunity for schools to take a flexible approach, as they always do on an ongoing basis, they have that flexibility over the coming days.
That was the Minister for Education, Norma Foley, under questioning there from Labour's Eoin Reardon. Martin Conway, many people found the introduction of the masks to be very sudden, confusing even. Was it badly handled sending a circular out to schools at 6 o'clock in the evening and expecting them to implement something like this the following morning?
Of course, there's no good way of doing this, to be quite honest.
Well, there is a good way of doing it.
Well, you tell me what the good way is.
Bad way of doing it.
Give a bit of notice anyway, for a start.
You know, the bottom line is that it was NPHET advice, which is public health advice.
Yes, and NPHET advised the government about 5 days ago. So the government took about 5 days to make up its mind, and then gave the principals, teachers, parents and pupils of this country a couple of hours.
They also didn't even have a cabinet meeting at the weekend, given that they got the advice and schools were
sort of... It was a cabinet meeting on Tuesday morning, Catherine.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, they got the advice, and in fairness, you would have thought they would have met at the weekend, given what people were, you know, everyone was waiting to hear exactly what was going to happen. I don't think it was communicated well at all in any way, shape or form. I think it's very confusing for children, and that's who we're talking about at the end of the day. Children are affected by this, and there's going to be so many issues for children who maybe have an additional need and have a difficulty. And we've heard about exemptions, and what I've heard from several parents today is that GPs cannot be contacted because they're so overrun and they're under pressure, and they don't know, they haven't been given any guidelines on what exactly classes as an exemption, and are uncomfortable giving exemptions when they don't know. So has there been any consultation? I would say there hasn't been with GPs.
The government has a very difficult job to do, and this was clear public health advice that was given last Thursday or Friday. cabinet met on Tuesday morning, and you know the advice to principals, and what Norma Foley said in the clip is absolutely correct. You know, schools will, as they always do, will take a practical common sense approach to it. I mean, I had people on to me from Cork today about, you know, deaf students and what the situation would be with them wearing face masks. And of course, when, you know, children are required in terms of lip reading and that's not practical and it's not going to happen. So the teachers, I have every confidence in the principals and the teachers who teach in our schools, the length and breadth of this country, to take a common sense and practical approach to it, because they, more than anybody else, understand the importance of public health curb the spread of COVID.
Okay, we've a text here and says there is no legal basis for masks in schools. Paul Hosford, is that correct?
That appears to be the situation, Justin. And I suppose the big question here, and I fully understand where Martin's coming from on the fact that this is a very difficult job that the government has in front of it, and that this is based on public health advice. But like you said, this public health advice came in a letter last Thursday. Today, the INTO is seeking further guidance from the Department of Education on what the appropriate procedure is when parents continuously refuse to send their child into school with a mask on. So we knew this was coming down the tracks. It was leaked from the NPHET meeting on Thursday. The letter went to government Thursday evening. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all of the papers had that the government was minded to put in this requirement that kids wear masks. Tuesday, we had the cabinet meeting. 6 o'clock, the circular goes out. And here we are, Wednesday, 10 o'clock, nearly a full week after the NPHET meeting, and the INTO was asking for clarification on what it is. It's one of these things that about the last 20 months where the public seems to know something's happening, the media knows it's happening, but the announcement of the thing that's happening that everybody knew was happening is done in a manner that makes everybody feel like it was rushed and last minute. My sister has two kids who fall under this new mask guidance. Her oldest already did. She got a text from the school at 6:30. When you have to sit down with a kid and say at 7 o'clock you have to wear a mask tomorrow, the kid all of a sudden feels this is an emergency. Whereas if you sit down with the child on Friday or, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and say from Wednesday morning you're going to have to wear a mask, we'll get used to it over the weekend.
That's a fair point, Martin Conway, isn't it?
Yeah, well, look, the key here is to keep schools open. And
I know, but the way in which this was done, it could have been handled better, couldn't it? Would you accept that?
With hindsight, there's an awful lot of things about this pandemic that could have been handled better. Mm-hmm. People are, and in fairness to the government,
this
the minister,
one of them,
the
though,
department,
wasn't it?
There's always room for improvement. And anybody who would sit in front of you, Justin, and say that there isn't room for improvement and that there isn't better ways of communicating is being disingenuous.
But the whole way the schools have been dealt with is a disaster.
Paul, you can laugh all you like, but the bottom line is that by and large, the government have actually done a particularly good job managing COVID. We have, in terms of mortality, we have one of the lowest mortality rates in Europe.
I want to let Paul back in there.
Well, let's deal with the point about the school. It's not a laughing matter. No, but it's a laughing matter when you're trying to say that, oh, sure, it's all in the past or whatever. This is a decision made, but yesterday. Can I make the point?
There's been decisions made in the past, Martin? And there'll be decisions
Martin,
made
if
in
I
the future.
Respond
Martin,
to
let,
the
Paul,
point.
Let, let Paul speak
so
for a moment.
The point is the government has handled the situation with the schools disastrously. And really, they've treated the public like children, and now they've created a problem for themselves. Because the message was, and I got it again and again and again, whenever I raised transmission happening in schools, from the government, The schools are safe. Then about a week ago, the message changed to, we never said the schools were safe. We only said they were a safer place relatively. And then a week later, we're in a situation where schools are correctly saying, in my opinion, it's a correct move to say that children should be wearing masks in schools. And the problem was the government wasn't upfront and open about the science to say that, yes, children are less at risk of suffering from serious illness as a result of COVID. Absolutely. That's a good thing. But they're an unvaccinated population. They're inside, often in unventilated or poorly ventilated environments, and therefore transmission is going to take place. However, we then as a society say, well, it's important to keep the schools open, and we're going to do everything we can to keep the schools open. And that may mean an impact in terms of other people outside of the schools. And it definitely should mean investment, for example, in HEPA filters. Yeah. I mean, I think Martin has the figures wildly wrong on the cost of HEPA filters at €1,000. But even if we grant your figure, 50 million euros, that's... that already more has been spent in schools in terms of other COVID measures that more than 50 million euros. 50 million euros is not a whole lot of money in the scheme of things. We think that money is more like 12 million.
I share common ground with Paul in terms of the filtration. Of that, there's no doubt. But I would much prefer to encourage young children to wear the face mask and be in school than having school shut, because we have had school shut for too long during this pandemic. And whatever public health measures need to be taken to keep the schools open, to keep our young people...
100%. But then you shouldn't have pretended that the schools, that there was a magical place called the schools where no transmission can take place, because that means parents say don't buy it.
But you say, Paul, we as a government...
Sorry, Mark, we've a text in here from a teacher. I teach senior infants. A lot of my day is spent in close contact with them, from helping them with their work to buttoning their coats, opening their lunches. I wear my coat all day, and after school I come home to my 70-year-old mother and pray that I have not brought something home. Teachers and children are out with COVID, and I am sick of hearing that I am working in a safe place, says that teacher. What do you make of that?
Well, look, it's hard to argue with that, and I wouldn't argue with it, because ultimately where people are circulating, even if they are children, and children are considered safer, but where there are children, and bearing in mind that the school also has a class, has a staff room, and you know there's mingling and engagements in staff rooms as well. So schools are safer, but they're not safe, full stop. And you know, we're going to be living, unfortunately, with this awful condition for a long time, and you know, that's why we have to try and get these
measures in place around the filtration and everything,
because
the other side of it, and came up a lot today in the debate on Paul's motion, was around how freezing cold so many kids are in school, wrapped up with scarves and coats and gloves and all sorts. And then, I mean, it was read out like
we've just have a text in on that. An issue is that the windows wide open in schools, children blue with the cold, shivering in class and try to learn in that environment.
That is a really serious situation for kids.
Nobody wants that situation.
I actually just don't know how you would actually learn properly in that type of an environment either. And at this stage, there isn't a reason, you know, we're nearly 2 years into this, for us to be justifying any sort of a closures of schools. So I think it's really important that they do get the filtration in place, and that they, you know, kids really have paid a huge price over the last 2 years with this.
Can I ask you just about that point I put to Professor Roberts earlier about the absence of a female voice in decision making around some of these public health measures? All of these decisions came about as a result of a meeting last week, a briefing between senior NPHET figures, the Minister for Health and the Taoiseach on Monday, all of whom are men, as far as I know. Is that something that needs to be addressed?
Yeah, I'm actually delighted that you raised that point and asked that question, because, well, first of all, I do want to say I think in general this government is particularly incompetent, and regardless of gender, I would have to say that. But I do think it's really important at any decision-making table and in throughout all parts of our society that women play a key role. And I really do feel that often the voice of women isn't heard. We see that all the time. We regularly have debates about how to make things more, you know, family friendly, or how do we encourage women into politics. And then we seem to do the exact opposite of what everybody talks about. And I do think that some of these decisions, you know, for example, the last minuteness of we'll send out a letter at six o'clock and hope for the best for the next day. I think those sorts of decisions are absolutely crazy. And I think that, you know, in general, you can't say in all situations, but in the vast majority of situations, women usually have the role of juggling the childcare, or if caring maybe for a relative. And I think they do sometimes see that, like, for example, I would be thinking their parents, where are they even going to get masks? Some of them may not have even heard until their way on to school. And the other thing is the amount of masks, and just to make this point as well around the cost, because there will be families who will struggle, and that hasn't been clarified.
And I know some schools
my eldest is in secondary, and every single day there's a new mask because the masks are going missing, and that's the nature of kids. But I do think that...
Just on that point,
that needs to be made.
Can I ask you, Paul Murphy, would you agree with that point, that there has been an absence of women's voices at the top table of making these decisions?
Absolutely. I mean, it is striking. You watch the press conference and so on, and it's like a series of men in suits. When you have the big announcements, it's a series of male public health officials in suits, and then later on you get the government announcements where you have a series of male politicians in suits. So I think it is poor. It will contribute in general, on average, to poorer outcomes in terms of decision making, because you just don't have the wide variety of perspectives reflecting, you know, over half of our society. So I think it's a problem. And I also think it's a problem if you want to get buy-in, where people feel, I'm just not represented here. My viewpoint, outlook isn't being represented here. So therefore, I feel, whereas we need to get buy-in as a society as a whole, which is about representation, but then also being honest and upfront in terms of the science.
Is that a point, Martin Conway? Even you take that briefing between senior NPHET figures, the Minister for Health and the Taoiseach on Monday. Yeah. There was no woman at that. And then Norma Foley seems to have been told what to do and is left having to send out a circular at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's quite like that, but I do accept, obviously, of course, you know, we should always strive to have gender balance and have, 50% of the community, represented at the highest level. There's no argument there. But I do think it's important as well to give a shout out to some of the phenomenal women that have been front and centre in this pandemic. And I think of the likes of Cliona Ní Chealaigh, Corina Butler, Professor Corina Butler, Catherine Motherway down in Limerick. They have been phenomenal in the work that they have done. They have showed a huge leadership.
And they have indeed, but we're talking about the top tier of decision making in the country.
I don't disagree with that, but I think what's important...
Do you think something should be done about that?
Yeah, well, look, I just want to see the best people, whether they're male or female, on NPHET, on NIAC, the people who have the expertise, the people who have the scientific backgrounds, will advise government and give the correct advice.
Yeah, but the issue is,
as I've said already, even on this...
Paul Hosford.
But the issue there is... This has been a recurring theme among the COVID decisions made, particularly at government level. And Catherine Martin did raise it last year that there was a lack of female representation. But for me, the issue there is you had this meeting, and representation is a huge issue. We know that across the board. But even from something as simple as on Monday night, the major decision that was being made, or the major decision that was kind of being prepped for cabinet, was around mask wearing in schools. The Minister for Education, by process, probably should have been in that meeting in case there was any additional questions that had to be asked of NPHET. Now, I know they get briefings from NPHET. There's the high level officials group that briefs. But just even from an optics point of view and a process point of view, the Minister for Education not being in that meeting the night before cabinet discussed a major shift in policy in schools doesn't look good. It looks like the Taoiseach is either micromanaging her portfolio or that she's not being consulted on major issues.
What do you make of that, Martin?
I don't agree that the Taoiseach is micromanaging the Department of Education. I think Norma Foley took over at the very beginning of a pandemic, a very serious pandemic. It was uncharted waters. I do believe that she's doing her level best. Of course, no minister gets it all right. But I think, by and large, our schools are open and our schools have been open. And, I think, to be fair to her, she's a very competent, capable lady.
For now, she hasn't ruled out anything
Can I just make the point as well, though, Justin, that, like, if you look at it as well, those working in the health service and in retail and in the jobs most affected probably by COVID, it is mainly women. And it is really important that their voices are reflected. And you were saying, should something be done about it? Yes, I do think, particularly in this situation, we've talked for the last nearly 2 years about it's an emergency and it's a pandemic, and they should ensure that there's female representation at that table.
And I think it's important as well to acknowledge the expertise of the people who actually are on NPHET.
I'm not to take away from that at all, for sure. Now, as Paul was mentioning earlier, cuts to the employment wage subsidy scheme came into effect from today. That's despite further restrictions, including guidance that people should work from home and limit their social contacts. At the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting this evening, a motion was passed calling for cuts to be reversed. The subsidy rate per employee earning between 151 and 202 euros fell today from €203 down to €151. That's essentially around a €50 cut. And the issue was also raised in the Dáil today by the Labour leader, Alan Kelly. Let's hear what he had to say.
Cuts to the rates of payment in the EWSS come into force today. Will you please reverse those? As I'm sitting here, I've got a WhatsApp message from an employer, basically, who's saying he ain't going to survive it. As last month, 25,900 employers availed of EWSS, using it to supplement the wages of around 290,400 workers at a cost of $52.7 million. Restaurants and hospitality, as you know, are being badly hit now. The list I just got WhatsApped by a gastro pub in my hometown of Nina shows hundreds and hundreds of people cancelling. Restaurants and areas like that really are going to go out of business. And young workers, women and single people with children are most at risk of seeing their disposable income fall or go altogether if these schemes, if this scheme is being wrapped up. So I'm really urging you to look at this again. Thank you. Thank you.
That's the Labour leader, Alan Kelly. Paul Hosford, it's not just pressure coming from the opposition in relation to the EWSS, the Employment Wage Subsidy Scheme. It's coming from within the government's own ranks as well. There is pressure on the government to reverse these cuts today, isn't there?
Yeah, from both parliamentary parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, motions were discussed. Fianna Fáil passed a motion calling for the this cut to be reversed. And I think Alan Kelly kind of hit on the nub of what's being raised is this, I suppose, any aversion or any avoidance of further restrictions relies on people limiting their social contacts. One of the ways that people are being urged to do that is not to socialise as much. If you're being told not to socialise, people are cancelling or just not booking restaurants at a time of year that restaurants and pubs would generally be crowded. And it is going to impact their bottom line.
Do you think there will be movement on that then?
I think it's going to be very politically difficult to not do it at a time when I suppose the government is trying to find this balance between keeping everything open because they don't particularly, I suppose the political capital isn't there to institute another lockdown, but also the money really isn't there to implement another lockdown as budgeted. So I think the big get out for all of the coalition parties right now, it would be an NPHET advice kind of one way or the other, strongly advising against socialisation or advising something like a return to table limits, because that would give the government political cover to go back on this EWSS cut and maybe just push it out another 2 or 3 months.
Paul Murphy, what's the effect of this cut going to be?
Well, I think for some small businesses, it may mean them going to the wall if, I think, at least the current situation prevails and it may get worse in terms of restrictions. I think then you're going to have a crisis situation for some small businesses and obviously for their workers. So I think absolutely the cut should be reversed immediately. I do think it's interesting that Fianna Fáil passed a motion calling for reversal of this cut, this payment that goes to businesses, but I didn't hear of any equivalent motion being passed by Fianna Fáil in relation to the cut to the PUP, which has already taken place. People who are on PUP are down to €200 or €203 or €250, very difficult levels to live on. And if you are newly unemployed as a consequence of the actions that are taken now, perhaps you're a DJ, you work in the nightclub sector, you can't enter into the PUP at the moment. So I would say that also needs to be on the table, both cuts. If the economy is being affected, jobs, small businesses are being affected as a consequence of government actions linked to the pandemic, will then the supports have to be back in place. And that should also include, actually, a ban on evictions.
Kathleen, the Taoiseach told the Dáil today that in light of the arrival of the Omicron variant in Ireland, supports for employers would be, he said, kept under review. Is that enough to satisfy you?
Well, I mean, that could mean so many different things. So I think it's important that there's clarity. And already, I think the hospitality sector has said that they are going to be down revenue from people, you know, council and various get-togethers and parties. So I think it's important that there is support. Nobody wants to see any businesses closing, but I would really agree with what Paul is saying there as well in relation to the PUP payment. Workers have to be supported as well, and those payments should be reinstated, and for anybody who is new coming into it, because if your, you know, job is affected by the decisions, you know, of government, like for example the change that time to the midnight closing time, you know, they do need to put those supports in place for businesses and for workers in the sector. Definitely.
Martin Conway, the Restaurants Association of Ireland said that this cut to the EWSS, that it was a monumental blow and would lead to people exiting the industry. Do you accept that that is true?
Well, nobody wants to see anyone exiting the industry, but I think it's important to point out that the EWSS has already cost the taxpayer $5.5 billion. And last month alone, it was in excess of $400 million. And that's money that was put in to support jobs, to support businesses. And, you know, the government have travelled the road with businesses up to this point. They're not going to abandon them now. So if there's tweaking needed, I'd be very, very confident that tweaking will happen. Because
Were you at the parliamentary party meeting?
I wasn't, because I wasn't at the parliamentary party meeting because we had a debate on COVID in the Shannon, and I'm the head spokesperson.
I'm sure you read all about it on Twitter no doubt. And there was clearly pressure from deputies in your own
sure
party.
Sure, to be honest about it, if you look at a nightclub down in County Clare, you know, in Dublin City, they have the option maybe of opening from 6 until 12 at night. But down in County Clare, that's just not happening, and it won't happen. And there's one business in Clare that is down €400,000 from the cancellation of Christmas parties alone. And that's reflected right throughout the country, rural and urban. So, look, the government won't be found wanting it. I'd be very, very confident in that.
All right. Paul Hosford, just want to go back to you for a second there, because the front page of tomorrow's Irish Examiner is in. It has the headline, Pre-Christmas Vaccines for Children. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, the government is aiming to start vaccinating primary school children. This is the aim had been to get the vaccines in around about the 20th of December, but that's going to be brought forward to December the 13th. Now, this is all pending NIAC confirmation that children aged 5 to 11 can be vaccinated. We know the EMA made the decision last week. The HC is planning the logistics around vaccinating thousands of children as quickly as possible. The ECDC, the European Centre for Disease Control, today said that children with underlying conditions or serious underlying conditions are the new vulnerable population in all of this, because they're the most at-risk unvaccinated population that are left. Okay. So the HSE plan is to get these vaccines rolled out from the 13th of December, which means you could have fully vaccinated kids by the middle of January.
All right. Well, you can read all about that in the Irish Examiner tomorrow and online. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with more after this.
The Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back to Wednesday's Late Debate with me, Justin McCarthy. And still with me in studio, Senator Martin Conway of Fine Gael, Kathleen Funchen, Sinn Féin TD for Carlow Kilkenny, Paul Murphy, People Before Profit TD for Dublin South West, and Paul Hosford, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Now, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, that's the government's spending watchdog, today issued a warning that the cost of the Climate Action Plan, or Sláintecare, don't appear to have been factored into the government's medium-term fiscal planning. It means the government will have to make some serious choices in the years ahead, according to Sebastian Barnes, the council's chairman. Paul Hosford, the Fiscal Council sounding an alarm bell here. Is the government listening?
Yeah, well, I think there is that recognition that what IFAC has said today. I mean, if you talk to people in government today, they said, look, that the actual assessment of the budget is a lot happier than it has been in recent years. But there is that I suppose that worry that the Sláintecare and the climate change plans haven't been accounted for. The report itself said that last year the government threw everything that it had at COVID, but did add things into the 2021 budget that weren't necessarily funded, which is not a great warning to get from your financial watchdog, particularly at a time like this. But then I suppose one of the things that IFAC is looking for, and that I suppose that maybe some resistance to, is that idea that these spending plans be put into legislation so that no matter what the government of the day wants to do, that they are bound by these spending plans.
That they have to keep their own promises. Paul Murphy, Sebastian Barnes, the chairman of the Fiscal Council, said that there was no real analysis of what the government's plans to do with climate action would cost. And the estimated cost of Sláinte Care, he said, hadn't been updated since 2017. Are you concerned by that warning?
Yeah, well, I think there's a relatively simple explanation for why there's no costings and plans and so on. It's because I don't believe, for example, in relation to Sláinte Care, I don't believe the government is actually committed to implementing Sláinte Care. I think Sláinte Care is a very convenient... It's a very convenient kind of political thing that everybody signs up to. Sure, we're all for Sláinte Care. We take it off the political pitch. Apparently, everybody's opposed to the current system of two and a half tiers of health service. And we're all for this other system that's simply never going to arrive because they're not going to fund it. They're not willing to take on the private hospital industry, which is very powerful and which, in my opinion, needs to be taken into the public health system. And in relation to climate change, like you look at the Climate Action Bill and you look at the announcements around it and the plan, and they're saying 125 billion. But you look into the detail of that, the majority of what they're talking about is simply money that is going to be spent by either households or businesses. And what is lacking is the state-driven, publicly financed, like massive shift that is needed if we're going to achieve the kind of change, even in their own plan, which is not sufficient in terms of the 51% cut, but even that would require massive like public investment in green jobs, in retrofitting, in renewable energy, in care jobs, and that's currently completely absent. Right.
Kathleen Funchen, what do you make of that warning from the Fiscal Council today that the sums aren't adding up really?
Just in relation to the climate change thing in particular, like as Paul is saying, there does need to be so much public investment, particularly being in a rural constituency, in relation to transport. Like so many areas don't have any public transport, actually don't have any private buses even. You know, for example, Kilkenny, to get the last train to Kilkenny is 6:30. You know, I mean, that's crazy in 2021. So people don't have a choice, and there does need to be investment. I would be very worried. It does seem like it's a great thing. It sort of sounds very like, you know, you sign up to an idea or you sign up to some sort of a charter, but does it actually go anywhere? And same then for Sláinte Care, because as Paul said, we're all actually in favour of this, and there is so many reforms needed in the health service, but if the money is not going to be actually put into that, then we're never going to get the changes. And that hasn't been updated since 2017. It's very worrying.
It's a big problem, Martin Conway, isn't it, that you have these two massive areas of government policy in the health service with Sláinte Care and then the climate change, climate action plan, and there isn't money allocated to back them up.
Look, it's the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, their job is to critique government. Mm. Their job is essentially to criticise government.
They're independent. Yeah, they're an independent body.
And they did say back in 2018 that there wasn't a chance the government would balance the budget in 2019. The government did. While, you know, I have huge regard for them, they don't always get it right either. And, you know, I find myself agreeing with Kathleen. The last train to Ennis out of Dublin is 6 o'clock in the evening. You know, there's a huge amount of work that needs to be done. And, you know, I suppose, look, the pandemic has changed a lot. I think the public now absolutely buy in to a properly funded health system, even more so than they did before.
What about that criticism that there has been no real analysis of what the government plans to do with the climate action plan of what that will cost.
Look, we were laggards when it came to climate action. We're coming from very much behind. But what has been produced in the last 12 months, and in fairness to Eamon Ryan and the Green Party, and you know all of the other two parties in government as well, you know the work they've done to try and just reboot our commitment to this area is significant. And you know I think that you know the public out there realise that. You know, this is going to cost money. It's not going to be cheap. And particularly when it comes to Sláinte Care, you know, I think if you were...
That criticism from Paul there, that the reason why Sláintecare isn't funded is because the government doesn't really care about it or doesn't agree with it?
I don't agree. Obviously, I don't agree with Paul on his analysis with that. I think that the government is extremely committed to Sláintecare. Yes, it's taken longer than it should. You know, we've been through a pandemic, but there is a serious commitment to Sláintecare. And, you know, I'm very much personally within my political career committed to one-tier health service. And, you know, it's not going to be easy. There's going to be choppy waters ahead, but we will get there.
All right. I'm going to have to take a break there.
The Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
Well, that is our lot for this evening. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Late Date with Cathal Murray. But first, we hand over to Greg Allen on the Sports Desk.